there's so many different ways to make money. And I think as an entrepreneur, most people that are entrepreneurs, you're an entrepreneur because you have shiny object syndrome. And so I've had to really rein myself in on that, where it's, for right now, I want to be the best single family real estate investor in the world. And I'm going to focus all of my attention onto that. And I'm not really going to think about what's next.
Welcome to the Better Life Podcast, where we talk about real estate investing, building wealth, and all in all, living a better life. My name is Brandon Turner, and I've spent my life investing in real estate to achieve financial freedom. We want to help you do the same. So on this show, you're going to hear from world-class guests who have been handpicked to help you level up your investing, your leadership, your goals, your habits, and more to become the very best version of yourself. So join us as we explore the habits, the actions, the beliefs that it takes to build wealth through real estate investing without losing your soul. Cam Cathcart, welcome back to the podcast, man.
Dude, I'm pumped to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we got some exciting things to announce today, so I'm going to jump right into it. Cam, I know you as an active real estate investor. I know that your first full year as a real estate guy, you did like 100 deals, which is crazy. I know you as a father of three adorable little kids that hang out with us all the time here in Hawaii. I know you're as the husband of two. Husband of one.
Lexi doesn't know that yet. Yeah.
Husband of Lexi, who is one of my favorite humans in the world. And I know you are an educator. You're a someday author. We're going to make you write a book someday. And you're the host, or you could call it co-host. You're one of the hosts of one of the best podcasts on the planet.
It really is, man. It's really the best. It's a life-changing podcast.
It is.
I'm excited to talk about it.
And that that is, of course, A Better Life, or The Better Life Podcast, which is the new very slightly changed, but the new name of the show.
Is that, that's the announcement?
That's the announcement,
hey,
man.
Dude,
look at you.
Amazing.
So Cameron, for those who don't know him, you clearly did not listen to episode 8 of A Better Life with Brandon Turner. So episode 8, I interviewed both you and Lexi. It was an awesome episode. Actually, one of our most popular of all time. Ooh. Yeah, people love that one.
Really?
Just because Lexi's cute. Just, it's not for you.
Exactly.
It was a great episode. But we are actually changing the show to in a couple ways. I'm gonna lay out a couple ways we're going to change the show. And then I actually want to get into how the heck did you buy 100 deals your first year? So we'll get into the how-to in just a minute. But first, a couple reasons why we're making some shifts. First of all, I love talking to people about health and fitness and business and growth and being a good parent. We're going to still talk about some of that stuff and a lot of that stuff. However, the audience has spoken very loud and clear that listen to the show is that they are clamoring for more education and discussion that's going to help them get out of their job and get financial freedom. Something that you have done, going from broke pastor, making how much a year?
$40,000.
$40,000 a year as a pastor of a church, all the way to now making millions of dollars as a real estate investor. And that people just find that inspiring. And people want more of that in their life. So they've been asking, we put out a show that has to do with real estate. It gets 10 times sometimes the listens of a show that doesn't. So we're going to lean a little bit more into that. We're still going to talk about how to live a better life, obviously. But we're going to frame that a lot more within the idea of real estate investing for financial freedom. So I think that's going to excite most people listening to this show. If that doesn't excite you, you're like, I don't care about real estate. Don't worry. We'll still have shows that are a little bit more geared towards just general well-being in life. But we're going to relate a lot of the examples back to real estate investing.
Yeah.
That's our core audience.
Dude, I can't wait. And I think real estate is one of the best ways you can live a better life.
I do too.
Getting out and out of debt into financial freedom.
Agreed.
It opens up the door to so many amazing opportunities.
And even, you know, I found this back on the Bigger Pockets days when I was on that show. Like, so many of our listeners, they didn't even do real estate. They own businesses, small businesses, or they were just like W-2 employees, and they take the same exact principles that real estate investors do. And guess what? Real estate's a business.
Yeah.
So they apply it to their life and they exceed in other areas. So I'm excited, man. I'm glad to have you here on the show.
Dude, thanks for having me, man. I cannot wait. It's going to be so much fun.
It is going to be fun. So a few things about Cameron. Why Cam as a co-host of this podcast? A couple things. First of all, you live here in Maui, which helps. We've been hanging out a ton this year. Our kids go to school together and they hang out and play together almost every day. We do a lot. And so I've really got to get to know you and Lexi very deeply. And I absolutely love you guys. I think Thank you're great. Yeah, it's love you're just you. You're genuinely good people. Lexi more than you, but genuinely good people. You're amazing. So one, you're just good people. Number two, you're an actual active real estate investor right now.
Mm-hmm.
And although I am as well, the kind of deals that I buy are very different than the kind of deals many of the people listening to the show are buying, right? Like, what type of stuff do you buy?
Dude, I buy single family houses.
Yeah.
That is all I buy.
Okay.
So between $200,000 and $300,000.
I love it. And you're still buying a lot of stuff right now, even though you're like, you know, this big deal and you got all this, like you got Deal Flow Now, which is an education company. You've got a busy life out here in Maui. You're still buying on the mainland.
Still buying all the time. We bought one today. We bought one today.
You. Congratulations.
Yeah. So $125,000. Well done. So
dude, that's probably a good deal. Where was that at?
It's in a little town called St. Anne, Missouri. Yeah.
I'm just working on a video right now called, it's probably out on my Instagram at this point and YouTube, but it's 7 markets you can still buy in houses under 150,000. So that's clearly one of
them. That is one of them. Yeah. I mean, it needs 10, 15 grand maybe, and it's probably a $180,000 house. So we'll be into it, be able to burr out of it. There
you
go.
Is that your phone ringing? Or is that my phone ringing?
It's my phone.
That's all right. You want to answer it live on the call?
Yeah, it's TJ.
Oh, it is TJ. Oh, we did want to talk to him. That's okay. We'll talk.
I'm so sorry.
Dude, am I going to get fired? Live. You're fired already. All right, guys. This is The Better Life with Brandon Turner again. That's so funny. All right. So number one, you're a good person.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, you're actually investing in real estate. Number three, you exhibit all the stuff we talk about in the Better Life Tribe. The idea of becoming better inside so that you can get better outside.
Yeah.
Right? So you having the right habits, tracking those habits. I know you and I have been in a fitness challenge for a while now. I know that you just exhibit all these traits. I know you work at being a better husband, work at being a better father.
Mm-hmm.
You're actively trying to live a better life using the exact same framework that we've been doing. And you're in the tribe. And so, you know, it's fun to, you know, elevate people who are just killing it that are already in the Better Life Tribe. So dude, everything about that, it is great. And then lastly, I just like having a co-host. I missed it, being able to just chat with somebody. And so it's fun. I thought when I was trying to think through, should we bring on a co-host? I really like the idea of having one. Like, who do I do? Like it was a very, very short list and you were at the top of it.
Dude, thank you. That means a lot.
Yeah.
That means a ton. I'm excited.
All right. Well, with that said, before we get into the how you possibly just went from zero to 100 deals and how other people listening to this can just get consistent deal flow, is a phrase that you use a lot, deal flow.
Yeah.
I want to get to today's show sponsor. So
Yes. One
thing we do different on this show, as you know, is 100% of the revenue that comes in from ads goes directly to a charity of the guest choosing. So today, maybe this is different than the last time you were on, or maybe it's the same, is where should we put the money towards this show?
Dude, I was very inspired by Tim Tebow.
Mm.
So let's give it to his organization. Yeah. I love everything about it. I love the fact that he funds the organization out of his own pocket. Yeah. So then everything that you're giving goes towards the actual organization.
And he doesn't talk about that.
No, he doesn't.
Like I had to like tell everyone like at the conference that we had.
Dude, that's amazing. Cause a lot of organizations you're like 10 cents of every dollar that you give goes to the charity. Cause everything else goes to operating the business. Yep. And so I absolutely love that. I think that's such an incredible part of his organization. It just shows who Tim Tebow is as a person. And so, and the fact like he's such a good guy. Yeah.
Love it. Hey, quick story for you. About 5 years ago, I went to a real estate event where I met a handful of incredible investors. Two of them in particular, though, changed my life. Those two investors were Brian Murray, Ryan Murdoch. They're now partners with me at Open Door Capital, where we bought over $1 billion worth of real estate. Not a bad ROI for an event, right? Now, why do I share that? Because it's one of the most underutilized tools for real estate investors, events. You can't put a price tag on the relationships you build, new business partners you meet, the knowledge you gain. And that's why I'm excited to tell you about Better Life's REI Summit that I'm personally hosting on May 3rd through May 5th in Denver, Colorado. I'll be there along with a number of other speakers that you might recognize like Ken McElroy, David Green, AJ Osborne, Brian Murray, who I mentioned earlier, and more. The event's going to be the most actionable real estate event ever, with sessions being structured on a how-to basis so you can walk away with actionable steps that you can actually implement in your business ASAP. Whether you're a new investor or a seasoned investor, the dual track sessions ensure that you'll be in sessions relevant to your business and experience. If you're interested in learning more, check out reisummit2024.com. That's reisummit2024.com. Ticket prices are increasing soon, so register ASAP to lock in the lowest rate while you can. Cameron.
Yes.
Cam or Cameron? What do you like better?
Let's go Cam.
Cam.
Cam. Cam's easier.
Cam is easier. Coffee with Cam.
Mm-hmm.
What is Coffee with Cam?
Coffee with Cam is something that I'm going to pick back up.
Okay. Yes. Take a little break.
I've taken a little break. I just did it on Instagram. I started one morning, I was drinking a cup of coffee and And I was like, I need to post something on Instagram. Mm. And I threw out a little real estate tip and I said, coffee with Cam, and it kind of stuck. And so I started doing that more often. And yeah, so I'm going to pick that back up. By the time somebody hears this, I'm going to start doing coffee with Cam again.
Okay. I believe it. I believe
it. And I love coffee. Coffee is so good.
Coffee is so good, man. True story about coffee. So Ryan Murdoch, who's my neighbor, lives in my backyard because I have a house back there and he rents from me. Many of you know Ryan Murdoch. Ryan has been around for a long time. He's a co-founder of Open Door Capital. He's one of our favorite people in the world. Just good dude, right? So Ryan has been gone for months, traveling around the country in a van. Like, they bought a really nice van. He comes back to Maui today, actually, or last night. But before he gets back, he was smart. Ryan's a smart guy. And he ordered coffee for himself because he knew he would need coffee when he gets here. So he orders a giant box of coffee so he would have it when he arrived. And it arrives on, I think, Sunday. Uh-huh. Maybe it was Monday. And the mail person put it on. I have a gate, a sliding gate in the front of my property that goes up this big hill to my house. The person put it right over the gate, right in the middle of the driveway. So I, of course, drive up to the gate and then open the gate, but now the box is right on the side of the gate where I cannot see it. And I drove right over it. And I crushed every single bag of coffee that
It's ground coffee now. It's ground coffee. It's still going to be perfect.
It is very ground coffee. Yeah. Get it? Ground.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Oh, I'm funny. You're funny, dude. That's why you put me on.
That's why you're here on the show. So I crushed all of his coffee. So I owe Ryan Murdoch some coffee. So, all right, man, let's get into how did you go? So I want to talk about you. What were you doing before getting into real estate, and how did you find real estate?
Yeah. So, long story short, I went to a school out in Colorado.
By the way, quick thought real quick. We're exploring the podcast right now.
Yeah.
I have a song I wrote with a country writer named Seth Mosley. He was on Bigger Pockets. He's a real estate guy as well. We wrote a song called Long Story Short, and I think I'm going to get a button that every time somebody says the word long story short, we go boom, and it plays like a quick, like,
so
5 seconds.
Say that.
Yeah. Let's make a long story short, make it simple, babe. All right. Anyway, this is a good song. Sorry, keep it long.
Take
long
that back. Let's rewind that. my story of getting into real estate. So I went to school out in Colorado. I wanted to be a pastor. Ended up graduating from school, went and actually was a missionary for a year in Belize. And I say I wasn't there full time. I led short term trips down there, ended up getting out of that, went into full time ministry at a church, was over the sports ministry. And from there I went and was a youth pastor. And then from there I took a job as a teaching pastor. And through it all, I absolutely loved everything that I did. Was a blast getting to do that and getting to be a part of that. But I was broke. And, you know, I've talked before on the first episode about how we had some financial situations and some health scares that made me realize I needed to do something else. And I remember, you know, that moment where I was just sitting at the dinner table and we got hit with a $15,000 hospital bill. Mm-hmm. And I felt hopeless. I felt like helpless in a way. And I felt like I wasn't doing a good job as a husband, wasn't doing a good job as a dad. You know, I wanted to provide for my family. And, you know, that as a dad, that's one of my number one callings, is to be a provider for my family. And I remember sitting there being like, I'm not doing that right now. And so I decided to start exploring options to get into just some sort of side hustle. I didn't know what that looked like. I had no idea what that looked like, whether that was buying crypto, which I don't know anything about crypto, but buying crypto, you know, I was watching like Gary Vee videos like going to garage sales and buying stuff and flipping that. I was just exploring side hustles. And I was actually at one of my buddy's house. His name's Ronnie. And he was working on his house, and I was just hanging out, helping him lift some stuff. And he was listening to a podcast at the time. And I kind of started listening to it as we were working, and it was a Bigger Pockets podcast. So listen to you. And that was 2018 was when that would have been. And I was immediately hooked on that. So then I went and I bought, you know, all of the books that you wrote and started reading through all of those books in 2019 and just learning as much as I could about the industry. And honestly, midway through 2019, I realized like, hey, we've got to dive in. I'm learning a lot, but we've got to dive in. And so at the time we were living in Colorado, but I didn't know anything about the market. If I would have known, I would have known that I could have invested in Denver. Denver was a higher price point. And so moved back to St. Louis. And that was kind of my goal, as I took a job in St. Louis as a teaching pastor, and I was going to invest in real estate on the side. The whole purpose of that, though, was because I still didn't know any better. I hadn't read the Burr book yet. And so I thought that the only way that you could invest in real estate was by saving up money, putting 20% down on a house, and doing that over and over again. And so my goal was, hey, I'm going to buy 1 to 2 houses a year for the next 20 years. And then, you know, by the time I'm 50, I'll own 20 or 30 houses. And then I'll spend the next 25 years paying them off. But in the time I'm 75, I'll have 20 or 30 paid off houses, and that'll be my retirement. So that was kind of the whole goal. And then I read about the Burr method and that you could buy houses without any of your own money. And so we bought our first house actually in the fall of 2019. And that actually wasn't a Burr, that was a flip, and didn't do well on it, barely broke even on it. But we got done with that one, realized, hey, we can do this. Like this was fun. It was something that my wife and I got to do together. We got to build together. We got to dream together. We had a blast doing it. And so after that one, that wrapped up, I think we sold that in December of 2019. And then in January of 2020, we bought our first rental property. And then from there, like a week later, we bought our next flip. And then a week later, we bought our next rental property. I mean, we just kind of went crazy. And we bought literally every deal that came through that made sense. And we just started buying properties left and right. And the rest is history. It just kind of blew up from there.
So most people, when they get started with real estate, it's a similar beginning. Most people discover it somehow on a podcast, or they hear about it in a book or watch a YouTube video. Then they're intrigued. And so they start to study and they start to learn, just like you did. Then they start to, like, they say, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to jump in. And then they buy one house their first year, maybe. They maybe buy one house their second year. Maybe they skip a year or two. And then 3, 4, 5, 6 years in, they've got a small portfolio. 10 years in, they're finally starting getting warmed up. You didn't do that. So what was the difference? What was different about your mentality or about your situation that allowed you to just ramp up so rapid?
Yeah. So there's a quote that I live by, and it's not necessarily always a good thing. The quote is, anything worth doing is worth overdoing. Moderation is for cowards. So there's another way of saying that too, but that I've heard, but moderation is for cowards. And that can be really bad in some aspects of life. Believe me, but when I get into something, I'm all in. I get into even being a husband, being a dad, being a friend, being, you know, a real estate investor. It also like sports, working out, like
growing a mullet.
Growing a mullet. I'm going to grow a mullet, and I'm all in. So like I'm an all in type of person. I'm not somebody that stands on the sidelines. And so when I did it, I was all in on it. It wasn't like hey, I'm going to test this out, test the waters, see how it works. It was, hey, we're going to do this, and I'm all in.
Do you have any advice for people who are afraid to jump in to buy their first rental property? What do you tell them?
What's the worst that could happen? What is the worst that can happen? For me, that was part of it, where we were literally living in Lexi's parents' house, and I was making $40,000 a year. I was $60,000 in student loan debt. So there was, I couldn't really go. I mean, I could have went down, I could have lost some money and just put myself into more debt. But it goes back to, you talk about this all the time, asymmetrical bets. Yeah. You know, the worst thing that could have happened is we buy a property and maybe we flip a property and we break even on it. Or maybe we buy a rental property and it doesn't cash flow. That, or maybe we lose $10,000 or $15,000. Yeah. Or we do it and we figure it out and we're where I'm sitting today. You know, the best definitely outweighed the worst. And so I think that for everybody, like what's the worst that could happen? If you dive into this, you know, the worst that can happen is you don't make money, you lose $10,000 or $15,000, which I know sounds like a lot of money. That's scary. But in the grand scheme of things, it's not, with what it could do for your life.
Mm, beautiful.
So,
all right. You mentioned in January 2020, you bought your first rental pretty quick after getting started. How did you finance that? How'd you get that worked out?
Yeah. So I found that deal from a wholesaler. He reached out to me and sold it to me. I think I'm going to butcher the numbers on this. We bought it for, I believe, $65,000, I believe is where we bought it at. So I think they made like a 10K spread on it. So they had it for 55. They sold it to me for 65. The rehab on it was like $30,000, and it was worth $135,000, $140,000. And so originally wanted to use hard money and couldn't get hard money because I hadn't done enough deals. And so I made a list of all of the rich people that I knew and knew that I wanted it. And so I just started going from rich person to rich person and asking them if they would lend on the house. And first couple people said no. I won't say their names. They might be listening.
But they're dead to you.
First couple people said no. And then I had a really great, this is a great point. for when it comes to reaching out to private money lenders. So I didn't know what I was doing, and I had zero, I had zero history doing it. So I didn't have a great portfolio to present to somebody. And I was going into private money lenders. I literally was just going down the rich people on my phone, you know, and saying this person, this person, this person. I was going into those conversations, making it almost needy in a way where, or like, hey, can you help me out? You know, almost like I was asking for something. And I had a great conversation with a mentor of mine, and he basically gave me some advice of like, no, you have a really great offering. Like, you are coming in there and you're offering them something in return, a really great interest rate that I was giving them. I paid 12% at that time. I've lowered it a little bit since then. But like, walk in there with confidence, knowing like, this is a really great offer. And if you don't want it, the next person's going to take it. That's and so I started walking into those conversations with a little bit more confidence. And probably my fourth or fifth person ended up saying, hey, we'll lend on this, and ended up doing that. And you know, within 3 months, I gave them about $5,000 back. And the second that I gave that back, they called me and said, this was the easiest money I've ever made. Let's do it again. And that's still one of my biggest private money lenders to this day. So have used them over and over and over again.
I love that. There's the concept around, like, I don't say fake it till you make it, but just like being confident because you do provide value, and there's something there.
Yeah.
That is just so unique. In fact, I'm going to see if I can pull it up. I don't know if I'll be able to find it here. Hold on. Yeah, right here. So there's a quote I read the other day that I thought was just super good. I'm going to read it now. It basically says, Kurt Vonnegut once said, we are what we pretend to be, so we must be careful about what we pretend to be. Ooh. I'm like, I read that. It hit me so hard, because it's like, it's not always fake it till you make it, but it's like, none of us know how to do any of this stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you've never done a deal before. Like, you can go in there scared, and you can go in there like timid, and everyone will feel that. Because you're either pretending to be scared or you're pretending to be confident. Either way, like, you don't know what you're doing. Like, you're making this up. You've never done it before. Mm-hmm. So like, you might as well be careful and pretend you're confident.
Yeah.
And guess what? You become confident. Mm-hmm. And I was not naturally good at speaking. I'm not naturally good at writing. I'm not naturally good at any of this stuff. I just pretended I was a great podcaster. Like, I had no idea. I was terrified on my mind, but I was like, I'm going to pretend. Yeah. There's a certain level of like, again, it's not fake it till you make it. It's like you become that person in that moment. You are what you pretend.
Yeah.
So it's not that you want to become that person. Like, when you pretend, you just become that.
Dude, it goes back to almost visualization. Am I saying that right? Where I remember reading in a book a story about they took a bunch of people and it was about dunking a basketball. Or it was about your vertical. Yeah. And so they took a bunch of people and they put them through, you know, a 6-week training program where they, you know, lifted weights, they jumped, whatever, to jump higher. They took another group of people and they said, hey, just envision the 3 steps and jumping as high as you can every single day for 20 minutes. And at the end of the program, and I don't remember how long it was, the people that visualized themselves jumping higher actually jumped higher than the people that were working out. And it was nuts. Like, but it's so true. Like, just if you pretend enough, you are going to become that.
Yeah. That's wild. Mm-hmm. All right. So you pretended to be successful and buy 100 deals a year. Did that, like, were you surrounded by people that were just doing like lots of deals? Or were you surrounded by people who were doing none? Were you connected with anybody? Or were you by yourself? Like, how did your community help or not help your
position? Yes. That's a phenomenal question, because you're such a great podcaster. You're such a great podcaster. So when I started, I did not have people in my life that were investing in real estate. And so I knew that I had to find somebody that was investing in real estate. And so I had a friend on Facebook who I'd graduated high school with. He was older than me, I would see him post every once in a while about real estate. And so I reached out to him on Facebook and I was like, hey man, would love to just sit down and chat with you about real estate. And to his credit, he immediately messaged me back and was like, hey, yeah, let's meet up for breakfast. Ended up, and I didn't know this at the time, he ended up being honestly one of the largest investors, if not the largest investor in St. Louis.
Wow.
And we sat down and I talked to him and he was telling me about everything that was going on. And it blew me away. And so immediately I got plugged in with him and then with his company and with his network. And he was such a great guy and plugged me into, gave me everybody that I need to know, contractors, real estate agents, wholesalers. He just connected me with everybody. And then through that, I started hanging around people that were doing 50, 60, 70, 80. I mean, Sam was doing 200 deals a year at this time. And so he was somebody that I was with all the time. And so just being around those people elevated me, where I think one of the biggest struggles that people face sometimes is like the belief that it can't be done.
Yeah.
You know, you hear the story of like the 4 minute mile where it took, you know, nobody broke it, you know, until like 1960 or I don't remember what year it was. And then the next year, like 15 people broke the 4 minute mile just because it was proven that it could be done, you know? Yeah. And so that was what this network was for me is like, hey, this person just started a couple years ago and already has 40 rentals. This person, you know, I think Sam started in 2013 or 14 is already doing, you know, and this was 2020 is already doing 200 houses a year. Like, it can be done. And so being around that, it elevated my confidence and honestly just gave me the ability to move forward with a lot of aggression, maybe, or aggressively move forward because I knew that it could be done.
I interviewed a guy on the Bigger Pockets podcast years ago who, when I asked him, he did 100 flips his first year. And I asked him, how the heck did you do 100 flips your first year? Again, similar story to yours. And he goes, well, all my friends were doing 100 flips a year. So I love this phrase. This is like just rocked my world. He goes, I didn't know that wasn't how it's normally done.
That's, yeah, right? That's like amazing. Yeah.
He just like, he assumed that that's what flipping was, mm-hmm. was you do 100 houses a year because that's what his friends did, mm-hmm. which is also like true for every area of life. If you just come, like, this might sound a little weird, but I'll say it anyway. We were sitting at the Super Bowl party at your house recently, right?
Yeah.
And I was looking around the room and I was like, every single person in this room is super in shape. All of us were like are in, super, like we're not Olympians, but like we're all in shape. There was nobody that wasn't in shape. And I was like, that's interesting. I was like, it's because we all hang out together and we just naturally become like each other. I've gotten way better in shape since you moved out here because you're in shape. And so like I don't know, there's some thing around like you become like those you associate with.
Yeah.
And if you don't, if you're not willing, like if you don't rise to the level of everyone around you, you just end up like leaving them because like it pulls you down or you just feel weird mm-hmm. in that group, maybe subconsciously, but yeah, you become like those you associate with.
Yeah. 100%. And so the networking for me was the secret sauce and getting involved with those people. And even like the realizing how easy it was. So I remember, and it was definitely a lot easier to find good deals in 2020, sure. but I remember one of the very first houses that I bought, I was around $80,000. The lady had agreed to $80,000 with me. And I was sure that I was going to lose money because she accepted my offer, you know? And so I called Sam and he's like, no, dude, he checked out the numbers and was like, it works. And I ended up making like $25,000 on that deal. And just like realizing, like having somebody there to like walk me through it, but also realize like, hey, this isn't rocket science. Like I literally you can analyze a single family house on the back of a napkin or in your head, you know, like the ARV is here, rehab's going to be here. Here's where my offer's at. It's not rocket science, you know? And so just learning that from them where I think that I thought that it had to be so sophisticated and complex and it's really not.
Yeah. Here's a point that I think your story illustrates mm-hmm. that I wish I would have been told when I got started in real estate mm-hmm. is that real estate investing, almost every aspect of it is simply a dial that you can turn up and down. Mm-hmm. What I mean by that is like, if somebody can buy one house a year, you could buy 10, you could buy 20, you could buy 50, you could buy 100, you could buy 500. It's all just dials you turn up and down. Now there's different levels of leadership that you have to be able to understand and marketing mm-hmm. and all that. But generally speaking, like it's not 100 times harder to buy 100 houses a year than it is to buy one a year. It's simply a different way you think about the problem, mm-hmm. right? Like mindset, I've always kind of defined mindset as the way you approach problems in the world. So if you're like, the question you throw out there is, how do I buy one house a year? Your mindset will get you to one house a year. Mm-hmm. You're going to solve that problem. If you're like, I'm going to buy 50 houses a year, or mm-hmm. I'm gonna do what that guy did and buy 200 a year. Mm-hmm. You're gonna approach it from a whole different way. You're not gonna be doing every single solitary aspect. You're not gonna be knocking on doors all day long trying to get your first deal. You're gonna work a way, your brain will make a way to get you to do that.
Yeah.
So just, it's like that age old, the adage, like ask, if you want a better answer, ask a better question. Mm-hmm. If you want a bigger life, ask better questions.
Yeah. Yeah, you said something at one of your goal setting retreats at one point where it was like, hey, if you wanted to do in a year or 5 years, if you wanted to, like, say my 5-year goal was to buy, you know, 500 houses and you needed to do that in a quarter, like what would you do? Who would you hire? How would you start marketing? And that framework was was incredible for me, just sitting down like, oh, like I would need this person. I would need this person. I would need to hire this person. We need to up our marketing to this budget. But it truly is doable because like you said, it's just a dial.
Now, I love that mental practice. Yeah. What if you had to get your, Elon Musk asked that question, right? Like what if you had to hit your 10-year goal in 6 months?
Mm-hmm.
Like you might not hit it, but you're gonna be way further. But it puts you into a different state. You have to start thinking laterally and start thinking like systems and business more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
So what would you do if you had to suddenly buy 500 houses a year going forward?
500 houses a year going forward.
You had more than 5X or 5X your deal flow. What would you do?
Ooh, I would hire
Let's make it even harder. 10X. You have to 10X. You have to buy 1,000 houses
in 1 year.
In 2024. Now you can't just apply a little bit more pressure.
Yeah.
Like now it's 10X.
So what I would do is I would probably find a lot of turnkey buyers out there. And then I would start, because turnkey buyers are going to pay a little bit more.
Yep.
And so that would allow me to buy more deals mm-hmm. because right now I'm selling retail or keeping it for ourselves and I want a good deal. Turnkey buyers, a lot of times they're trying to just park capital somewhere. And so I would find a lot of turnkey buyers and then I would start marketing. Another aspect of this is we don't really buy in turnkey areas because those are, you know, a lot of times class C, B minus areas. And we try and buy B, B plus, A areas. And so, but there's a lot more deals in the class C areas. And so if I were going to buy 1,000 houses a year, I would probably redo how we do everything, where I'd find turnkey buyers, line up with a bunch of those that are all trying to buy 50 houses a year where they've got capital that needs to be parked somewhere. And then I would start investing heavily into marketing into some of these class C, class B minus areas, buying houses there. We'd have to hire on more acquisition managers. We'd have to hire on more project managers. We'd have to find different crews, but all of that's, we can figure that out, you know, because we're paying them. So we could figure all that out, but that'd probably be what I would do.
Cool.
And so first step is I would go out to California, New York. I'd go to some of these higher income earning areas that have less deals. And I'd go to every meetup that I could. And I said, hey, I can get you a deal. I can get you the 1% rule in St. Louis, where it's unheard of, you know, in those markets, and just start connecting with them. And
I love that. That made you think laterally, made you think of a different business model that you wouldn't normally do. It doesn't mean you're going to do it. It's a good practice for somebody. Mm-hmm. So somebody out there right now watching the show or listening to the show going, well, I want to buy my first deal this year. I'll just throw it at you. What if you had to 10X that? Like what systems break? What systems do you need to build? And that's going to answer a whole lot of things for you. Doesn't mean you have to. It just gets you thinking in a different way.
Yeah.
Beautiful. How were you finding deals? How are you finding deals?
Yeah. So I find deals through relationships. I do direct-to-seller marketing, but I'm such a firm believer that somebody that wants to, you know, let's say, exit their full-time job and be full-time real estate, again, people make it more complex than it needs to be. Like you don't need to... You honestly don't need to build out a website. You don't need to figure out a marketing campaign. You don't need to pull lists. You don't need to send direct mail or, you know, have a cold calling center or, you know, any of that. You can buy 50 plus houses a year just through relationships. Mm. And so what I mean by that is when I first started, I'll just tell you my story a little bit when I first started, and maybe it'll make it more clear. So when I first started, I was at every single meetup in St. Louis. Like if there was a meetup, a real estate investing meetup going on, I was there. And I was the first person to show up. I was the last person to leave. For me, it's easier because I just love people and hang out with people. So it was also something that I love to do. But I was shaking every hand. I was talking to every single person there. I was making as many relationships as possible. And some of the meetups that I was going to be honest, it was a one and done thing where I was like, hey, this is not a meetup that I'm going to continue going to. But some of them were great. And I would make as many relationships as I could. The next morning, I would wake up and I'd have a stack of business cards and I'd have numbers in my phone and I would call every single one of them. And I'd say, hey, let's grab coffee. And so I just built relationships. We'd sit down, we'd grab coffee. I would tell them what I was looking for. And one of the things we talked about, faking it till you make it, a little bit earlier, in this, I almost had the exact opposite scenario. Because real estate investors, I feel like they sometimes have a savior complex. And so I would, I would actually go into these meetings and I would still be confident and let them know like, hey, I'm 100% in.
I'm legit. I'm real.
Yes. But I would also be very honest with them of like, I need your help.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that the way that I presented those was like, hey, Cameron's a hustler and he's working really hard and I can help him out, you know? And I think I didn't go in there acting like I knew it all. Like, oh, I know what this is. And I know, you know, I walked in there like, hey, you're the expert. One of the things I got really good at was telling everybody, man, I've heard so much, so many amazing things about you. You're crushing it. Like, dude, I just would love to work with you. Is there any way that, you know? So I got really good at that and just building relationships, and deals just started trickling in, you know, where somebody would call me and they'd have just locked up a house and they would want to wholesale it. And, you know, they were getting a $5,000-$10,000 assignment fee, but it was still a great deal for me. And so
where would you make money in that kind of transaction?
For me?
Yeah. Like if they wanted to wholesale to you, are you going to wholesale to somebody else? Were you going to flip it yourself? Are you going to rent, like, or all of the above?
Yeah, all of the above. Okay. So I wholesale a lot of wholesale deals, but I don't daisy chain where I put it under contract with a contingency and hope to shop it. And if not, yeah, I back out of it. I would tell, like, if you were wholesaling a house to me and you were, you know, say you had under contract at 100, if I put it under contract at $110,000, I wouldn't have a contingency in there. I'm buying that no matter what.
Yeah.
Now, if I want to go shop it to my other buyers, I would probably get your permission first, but I do that. And if my other buyers don't want it, then I'm closing on it. So I make every offer to where I have multiple exit strategies, where there's the potential to wholesale this, the potential to wholesale it, the potential to flip it, or keep it as a rental property.
I like that, because what you're basically saying is you're saying, like, to your buy, if you're in a wholesale, you're saying, hey, I will buy this if you don't. Mm-hmm. Like, I believe that much in it that I buy whatever I don't wholesale out.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore you can trust me that I just, you know, I'm happy to buy it or you can buy it.
Yeah.
Because I'm happy to just get my money moving and get a quick cash and go on, or I'll buy mm-hmm. it and keep it as a rental, or I'll flip it myself. But either way, we're aligning our interests here.
Yeah.
That's smart.
Yeah. I think one of the things that helped me is that I didn't put contingencies in my contract. You know, I think that's get a lot of people bad names, and especially with wholesalers. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, you know, give me a 2-week contingency. Really what they're saying is give me 2 weeks to shop this, yeah, and then I'm going to back out. Every house, I think out of the, you know, close to 400 houses that I've bought, I've probably put contingencies in a contract 15, 20 times. And that's if it has a pool, if it's on septic, if there's really terrible foundation issues, something along those lines.
Because you actually have to check those out.
Yeah. Those I can't just eyeball. Those I need a professional to check out. But like with the house, I can eyeball it, you know?
When I bought my house here in Maui for $1.7 million, I was like, of course, I'm not a dumb investor. So I, of course, got an inspection. I hired a professional inspector. They came and did the whole house. And then they're like, do you want to add on a pool inspection for... It was like $300. And I was like, nah, it's all right. I'm sure the pool's fine.
Looks great.
And then I get there and the pool pump doesn't work. The heater doesn't work. Nothing works. And it's like, I was probably spent 20
grand
now at this point fixing up my pool.
And it's great pool though.
Yeah, it's a great pool now. But it's like, sometimes mm-hmm. we make mistakes. But yeah, like pools, good things mm-hmm. to inspect for. Mm-hmm. That's all I'm getting there.
Yes, 100%.
Because you never know. It's like most things in a house, like, especially once you've done it enough, like you can walk into a house and be 98% sure that what you see is what you get.
Yeah.
It's very rare to be like, we opened the wall and there was like a human body in there with like, you know, like, it's like, that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
It's like, you're like, okay, yeah, we're gonna need some paint here. We need some floor in here, kitchen here, cabinets. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's not hard to evaluate the numbers on a deal when you're first getting started, but once you do a few of them, they're all pretty simple.
Yeah. Once you've done, I would say 10 or 15, like it is like clockwork. There are things that obviously like you're going to be wrong,
yep,
but you can be within 10%. And that being within 10% is not going to make or break a deal for me. Now, if I buy a house that needs, I'm off $30,000, you know, and my rehab budget's 50 grand, that's, what is that, 60% that I'm off? You know, then that can make or break a deal for me. So.
What's the worst deal you ever did?
Worst deal I ever did. I got it. This was a bad one. So I bought a house off of pictures once, and I don't really buy houses off of pictures. And so bought a house off of pictures, and the person that I was buying it from was pretty honest and told me like, hey, there are some foundation issues. They had a picture of the foundation. And again, you know, on that, I honestly thought that it was a rebar pop, didn't need much work to be done. And so underestimated the rehab budget on it. But because I put it under contract with no contingencies, when I walked it, I realized, hey, this needs way more work than what I expected. But I'd still like, it was a relationship that I had for a long time. And I wasn't going to ruin that relationship that I've probably made hundreds of thousands of dollars, maybe over $1 million off of that relationship. So I wasn't going to ruin that over 15 or 20 grand, you know, and try and renegotiate or retrade on it. So I ended up closing on it. And Ended up, I mean, it wasn't that bad. I lost $25,000 on it. So it was just, I shopped it. Nobody wanted to buy it. Ended up closing on it. I didn't want to flip it because it needed too much work. And so it listed on the market and it just sat forever. Holding costs started to add up and ended up finally selling it, but took a pretty decent bath on it.
You know, there's something to be said though around this idea that if you've never lost money on a deal, if you never lose money on a deal, you're probably too conservative.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and you're not probably not getting as many deals as you could. So like there's a certain, I'm not saying people should go out there and just be dumb and buy stuff, but I want to encourage people with the thought that if you do lose money on a deal, mm-hmm. like it's because you're being aggressive and being aggressive gets you wealth yeah. faster.
That's so I just talked to a buddy and I think they bought 180 houses last year. And it was a great year for them. And he's the COO of a company. And they only lost money on 4 deals. Mm. And the CEO was actually pissed at him. You know, that they only lost money on 4 houses because he was like, that means we're not out there being aggressive.
Yeah, we're not
like
aggressive
you just
enough.
Said. Yep. Like we could buy 300 houses and maybe we'll lose money on 15 deals. Yep. But we make way more money in the long run. So I love that.
It's just
that.
A different way of mm-hmm. thinking about failure. People mm-hmm. think a failure is a bad thing.
Yeah.
But I think the most successful people I know would think a failure is just part of the business.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, man, funding deals. How in the beginning were you funding them? How did you get the money for all this stuff? And what are you doing today?
Yeah, so private money lenders have been a huge part of our story. We got connected with private money lenders. And part of that is my superpower in real estate is networking. And so funding deals was never really an issue for me, where I could sit down with somebody and I could ask them for money. And a lot of times I would say yes. And so I networked with a lot of private money lenders. And then I had a hard money lending company in St. Louis that worked with me. They're absolutely amazing. I still work with them to this day, where and I loved them at the beginning because they actually send out somebody to go walk your house and put together a rehab budget, put together an ARV. They'll tell you what they're going to lend on it, where they feel comfortable. And it's actually a really great process because it also will show me if my numbers are off or, you know, yeah. on that. So, so I worked with them from day one, and still work with them, a hard money lending company. I've used, multiple times, like a national lending company that has gone really well. So I've used, you know, national hard money lenders. I've used bank financing before. And then over the last couple of years, we've been able to build up our funds to be able to use a lot of our own money for our deals yeah. that we're doing as well. So
very cool.
Yeah.
And where do you see the future of you and your wife? You know, where do you see yourself headed real estate wise? Want to get into the larger deals, commercial, industrial, anything like that? Ramp up, stay the same. What's coming?
I was going to say that's a great question, but I've said that after every question you asked. So that's my stall word to think of it.
Yeah, we all have a stall word.
So for my wife and I get asked that question a lot of like, why are you staying in single family? And I go back to, I think it's a Pace Morby thing where I remember him asking at a conference that I was at, he asked the room, you know, what's the hardest thing about real estate investing? And you had somebody yell out finding capital, and you had somebody yell out rehabbing the deal. You had somebody else yell out finding the deal, you know, and he stopped and he was like, no, the hardest thing about real estate investing is there's too many ways to make a bunch of money. And I couldn't agree with that more, where I've got friends like you that are crushing it in large multifamily. I've got friends that are crushing it in small multifamily, friends that are crushing it in storage, friends that are crushing it in Airbnbs or midterm rentals or single family rentals. And so there's so many different ways to make money. And I think as an entrepreneur, most people that are entrepreneurs, you're an entrepreneur because you have shiny object syndrome. And so I've had to really rein myself in on that, where it's for right now, I want to be the best single family real estate investor in the world. And I'm going to focus all of my attention onto that. And I'm not really going to think about what's next. I think whenever that time comes, it'll make itself abundantly clear. But right now it's like, we're going to build our company to be an incredible single family real estate investing company. And over time, there might be an opportunity to pivot, but I'm not out there looking for pivots, because I think that if I'm out there looking for pivots, I'm not going to be as good as I could be as a single family real estate investor. And so And I tell people that, well, you know, I had a conversation with a guy who invests, you know, in storage, and he reached out to me and wanted to invest in single family, but also wanted to continue storage and was looking into small multifamily. And he was talking about wanting to do it in St. Louis. And so we had a conversation. I was like, hey, for you to actually be successful and like to scale the way you want to scale, you have to be all in. Because if you're not all in, and I didn't say this I wasn't being mean about it, but if you're not all in St. Louis, I'm going to beat you, you know, like, cause that is me and my team's primary focus is investing in single family rentals. And so that's kind of how we view it right now, where we're all in on single family.
I love it, man. Yeah. It's easy to look at what other investors are doing and be like, oh, that looks better than what I'm doing. Like I do it constantly. I mean, I love what I'm doing, but I'm still like, oh man, that looks really fun to flip all those houses, or like, you know, like the grass is always greener. And it doesn't really matter what you do. Like if you're having fun doing it, if it's working, why pivot? Why change?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why add on new complexity?
And the key is just stick to it.
Yeah.
Just do it. Do it over and over and over again, and you're going to be successful.
Yeah. I think most people just get bored and they get bored and say like, well, what do I do now that's harder? Instead of saying I'm bored, so I'm going to get my systems even more dialed and become even better at this. Like that's not the response people do when they get bored. Yeah. They always say, I'm going to go do something new. And then go be brand new at it and fail at it for 10 years. Like, cause it takes a long time to get good.
Yeah. And I would say for us, like I've certainly gotten bored, and this sounds, you know, really dumb, but like when I used to buy a house, like I would get this adrenaline rush and like the endorphins, the dopamine hit or whatever. And it was the greatest feeling in the world. And now I buy a house and like, I don't even think anything of it. Yeah. Actually, I'm like, oh, that's just more work for us. You know, it has gotten boring, but I continually have to remind myself, like, because of this, I get to do so many cool things. Like, and also, you know, we've created new ways in our business where we've started scaling our business quite a bit and bringing on more employees. And now I'm not buying houses as much. I'm leading a team and I'm managing people. And so I'm still learning different skills, where at the beginning I was learning how to be a solopreneur and do it all by myself and really, really hard work and long hours. And now I'm learning how to manage people and to be a leader. So
yeah, that's awesome, man. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I saw a video earlier today on the internet that just really, it really touched me in that it was this director, or a writer. It was a writer of like a script writer for like movies, right? He was at a computer, a laptop, and he's on a meeting, like a Zoom meeting with somebody. And you just kind of see his face and he's arguing and he's saying like, but it doesn't really make sense. I didn't write it that way. Like the character can't say that at that point. And the guy's like, said something back. He's like, okay, I'll go back and work it, but I just, oh. And the call ends and he slams kind of the laptop shut and he's just like rubbing his eyes. And then like it's in this little skit, he's over there on the, like another version of him is over there that looks way younger. Uh-huh. And he says, wait a minute, we made it? And he looks up and he's like, huh? Yeah, he's like, we're writing movies?
Yeah.
And he goes, well, yeah, but you know, it's super frustrating. He goes, no. We made it. We're literally doing the thing that I wanted to do when I grew up.
Dude. He's
like, yeah. Isn't that powerful? Oh, it's like, we forget.
Oh my goodness. Like, I had a moment like this last week. So flipping is a very cash intensive business. Yeah. And so we've had some flips that are delayed and we had to basically cut a check from our personal account for over six figures to our Revel City, our business account, to be able to fund some rehabs because we had run out of money. You know, all that money's coming in. We've got multiple closings in the next couple of weeks, but we had literally ran out of money.
Yeah.
And I remember I was so pissed about it. And I was literally walking on the beach and I was like, I was fuming over it of like, why did we have to do that? And part of it was my fault, where I just didn't line up the proper funding for houses and whatnot. But I was like, wait, 3 years ago, if you said I had hundreds of thousands of dollars in my personal account to be able to cut a check to my business account while I'm standing on a beach in Hawaii,
yeah,
I would have kissed you on the mouth, you know, like it would have been the best thing ever. And so like, it's just, you know, expectations, like, right now my expectations have risen. But like, if I look back at, you know, 29-year-old Cam, 3 years ago, I'm ecstatic about that. I'm like, are you serious? I get to do that. Like, I get to cut a multi-$100,000 check to my business account. So
yeah, you're living your past self's dream.
Yes.
Right now. Uh-huh. It's like, in so many areas, like some people might be like, well, I don't have the real estate yet, but look at where you were 5 or 10 years ago. Like most people are just living a future version of their past self. Like they did it. They made it. Maybe it's not been perfect and they're not saying anything without struggle, but in that struggle, it's good to remember like, oh, look how far I've come.
Yeah. That's one of the things that so 2024 for me is the year of living in the present. Mm-hmm. You know, how everybody has like their words at the beginning of the year. That's one of mine because I'm truly living my dream life right now. Like if you look at our 5-year goals of have a net worth of over $5 million, living in Hawaii, cash flowing over $100,000 a year, like we've hit all of those in less than 5 years.
Yeah.
Instead of like, I'm very happy and pumped about that. I'm not saying that I'm not, but instead of living in the present and being like, man, that's incredible. And I get to enjoy it. Like I've got 3 healthy kids, an amazing wife, and I get to enjoy this. My mind's like, what can I do to make more money? What can I do to grow? What can I do to scale? What can I, you know, it's really bad at just like relaxing in the present and being like, man, we've accomplished some stuff and I'm going to celebrate that. So 2024 is my year of being more focused on the present and not the future.
I love it. What is your number one rule for building a better life?
Number one rule for building a better life. I'll pull in Jesus here. Okay. I mean, I think at the end of the day, you need Jesus. Mm. Every time my life is out of whack and I take a look at my life holistically, it's because it's not centered around Jesus. And so,
what does that look like for you? What does it mean to be centered around Jesus?
Yeah. And I know this is crazy to somebody that's listening to this and like isn't a believer, it's like, what does that even mean? Or, you know, that guy's a freaking weirdo. And I get that. I get it. But at the end of the day, like when I'm aligned in that aspect of my life where it's like, I'm loving people, I'm caring for people, I'm serving people, I'm giving, everything in my life gets better. I'm disciplined. And so when I fall out of that alignment, my life goes haywire, you know? And so for me, that is it. And I've seen it time and time again where it's like, hey, I haven't been in the word. I haven't been praying. I haven't been focused on Jesus. Like, you know, all of a sudden there's like areas in my life and it starts slow where it's like, I'm not doing as well in this area. I'm not doing well in this area. And I'm not doing well in this area. And the second I'm like, hey, I need to rein it in, everything in my life gets better. So that would be it. And I know that's a Christian answer to that question. I'm sorry, but that's the truth for me.
That's great, man. Don't be sorry. All right, let's shift over to the next segment of the show.
Okay.
The 3-2-1 pivot.
Let's do it.
All right, 3 books that helped pivot your life, change the direction of your life.
Ooh.
Is maybe different or the same as what you mentioned last time.
I don't remember what I mentioned last time, so I'm going to give you a couple. Let's do Good to Great.
Okay.
Love that book. I think it's such a great book for anybody that wants to be a leader. Incredible book. I remember reading that. That one I read probably 10 years ago or so, and it definitely changed my life and the way that I look at being a leader. The second one would be The Happiness Advantage. I love that book. Anybody that's listening to this, they should read that book.
I've not read it.
You've not read that book?
No.
You should read it, man. So it's basically taking like, you know, the world tells us that hard work leads to success.
Okay.
Success leads to happiness. In this book, it's all about the exact opposite, where it's like, if you are truly happy and love your life and what you do and are positive, then that leads to hard work. That is the book.
That's
right there.
Book. All right.
And then that hard work leads to success. So basically just kind of inverts the way, is that the right word? Inverts the way that we think about things. And you've heard me say before, you know, cause we own a business together and I've said in kind of our board meetings or whatever they are, like, hey guys, I just want to have fun.
Yeah.
I want everybody to love each other and get along and I want to have fun. And the second that this isn't fun, I don't want to do it anymore. And I think that gets misconstrued sometimes. It's like, I don't want to work hard. It's not true at all. It's that I know that when I'm having fun, scientifically, I'm going to be a harder worker. I'm going to be more creative. I'm going to be more passionate. And so when I'm having fun, I know that the business is going to be better because of it. It's not because I don't want hard work. I mean, hard work is fun sometimes.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of CrossFit or the beauty of like the Spartan races or raising kids, you know, or being married, like those are really hard works and there's really good days and really bad days, but you get to like grow a family and you get to do life with your best friend. Like that's a lot of fun, even though it's hard. So when I say I just want to have fun, it's not saying I don't want to work hard, but I want to have fun, you know?
It's one thing I love about real estate is that it is work and it is fun.
Like, yeah.
I have a ton of fun in real estate.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a blast. It's a blast.
I love it, man.
And then third book right now, I mean, I love Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. Mm-hmm. I know we've talked about that on the show before, but I think that's just such a solid book because I am 100,000,000% anti-hustle culture.
Yeah.
I don't believe in it. I think that my priorities need to be Jesus, my family, my friends, and then work. So I love that book for that aspect.
Amazing. All right, man. Yeah, I'd actually love to get John Mark Comer on the show. So we got to work on that. Mm-hmm. He's the author of that one. So very cool. All right, two people have changed the direction of your life.
Ooh, okay. I'm going to give a shout out to, so it's kind of one group, but it's three people.
Okay.
And so that is, and you might be, that is the Faster House owners. So when I was talking about the people that basically showed me real estate investing, that was Sam Prim,
yep,
Lucas Walls, and Brian Schroeder. And they legitimately took me under their wing and they showed me everything that it meant to be a real estate investor. I think they showed me also how to ethically and morally invest in real estate. Well, you know, the whole non-contingent thing, that comes straight from them. That's how they do business. And I learned that from them. And I think it 10x my business because I wasn't the scammy wholesaler trying to put properties under contract and with a contingency period and going shopping and backing out of the contract. I learned all of that from them. And so with my business career, you know, it started listening to you and then met them and they were able to kind of take me under their wing. And so that they were incredible in that. And then the second person would be a guy named Scott Brugman. And he used to be, he kind of started the church that I was working at. And then he stepped down from the lead pastor role to more of an executive pastor role. But he's just like, he's the best guy that you'll ever meet. And he's truly a person that is a man of God, you know? And so getting to sit with him and talk with him, and he's the wisest person I've ever met. And one of the things that I love about him is how humble he is. You know, at the church that he helped start was a church that in the church circles is a very, you know, popular church. And he could have spoken at every conference and written books. And instead he wanted to, he didn't seek a platform. He was like, hey, I want to lead my staff well, and I want to lead the people of this church really well. And that's what I'm going to focus on. And so he's just such an amazing guy and helped me out a lot through my 20s when I was just an idiot. So
that's awesome, man. All right. One pivot quote. And you said that one earlier on the show.
Anything worth doing is worth overdoing.
Yeah.
One pivot quote would be, I would say just bet on yourself. That's something that I say over and over again to myself every single day. When I'm analyzing a deal, when I'm about to have a conversation that could lead somewhere in business, it's always bet on myself. I truly do think that, you know, and not to be arrogant in it, but like I just think that I can do anything and that I have the capacity and the capabilities to do anything that I want. And so I'm going to bet on myself.
Very cool, man.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great quote. All right. Past, present, or future?
Yes.
What is your advice to your younger self?
Start buying real estate. Okay. Earlier. You know, one of my biggest regrets is I waited until I was 29 to start buying real estate. So that would be the first thing. And I think the second thing would be that it all works out. I think that's, you know, it's sometime, maybe when we're doing another podcast, I could get into the story of when I was in my early 20s, but had a lot of anxiety, had panic attacks, all that good stuff. Thought that my life was never going to be okay. And it all works out.
Mm. It all works out, man. What's a habit or action, or it could be just an item you purchased. It could be a new hobby, something you've done in the last year, the last 12 months, that's just given you a better life.
Moving to Hawaii has sure given me a better life. I would say probably 5 out of 7 nights a week, I watch the sunset with my family.
Mm.
It's the greatest thing ever. There's this green space across the street from our house. Our kids will run around. They'll do gymnastics. They'll play tag. My wife and I get to talk and just spending quality time with my family. Something that I've realized that I spend time with my family, but sometimes it's not quality time. And this is quality time with my family. And that means everything to me. And it's the best thing in the world. And so watching the sunset with my family.
That's great. And my wife and I, you know, my wife's going through the Better Life, you know, methodology, whatever. She's, you know, she's a tribe member. So her goal this quarter was to have 40 dinners at our house with just our family at sunset.
I love that.
And so she's like, I just want to slow down and I want to enjoy our meal and then watch the sunset as a family. So she's tracking in her journal.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And so I've been working. What's really fun is like, okay, I care about that, mm-hmm. but I would never like make that a goal, but it became her goal. So now I care about it and I'm helping her. I'm like, okay, this week we can do this day and this day. I'm going to be gone here and here, but I can do this one. And so now I'm, and she sees that. And then it's like, oh, like Brandon's helped me with what I want in life.
And so then she wants to. What? No,
I'm sorry.
I didn't mean to interrupt that.
I love it. It's been great, man.
Yeah.
It's been great. When I don't do it to manipulate. Like some people might hear that, like, oh, if you help your wife, she's going to reciprocate back. Mm-hmm. It's just the nature of reciprocity is when you are for your partner, they are going to be for you.
Yeah.
It's how the world works. You don't do it because of that, but it's just how it works. Mm-hmm. I love it. So last question of the past, present, future. What do you want your legacy to be? What do you want in your tombstone? What do you want people to say about you when they stand above your dead, cold body, rotten in the ground? Whoops.
Yeah.
Hopefully not that.
I hope that's... man. I want them to say, so I was at a funeral a while back, a guy who was an amazing business person. And his kids stood up and they talked about how great of a business person he was. And it made me sick. Mm-hmm. And it made me realize like, I do not care about money. I do not care about how great I am at business. I do not care about how great of a podcast host I am or books that I might write. Like I want my kids to say that I love them well. I think mm-hmm. that I think the number one thing that I can do is a person is raise good kids and raise them well. And so I want my kids to know that I loved them no matter what. I loved them through anything and that I loved their mom really well and that I cared about them. And then I want my friends to say the same exact thing. I want my friends to know that I loved them well and I had time for them and I was present in conversations with them. And so I want it to be about who I am as a person, not what I've done. Mm-hmm. I think that's really important to me.
Fantastic. All right. Two questions for the wrap up. First of all, what are you excited about? What's coming up? What are you excited? What are you doing in the world?
Man, I'm excited about this podcast. And then, I'm excited. I just opened up a new business that is all about real estate. And so I'm basically teaching people how to scale a real estate investing company. And so what I've found is that there's not a niche for that. There's a niche for, hey, you know, buying rental properties. There's a niche for, you know, slowly building up, you know, your cash flow and passive income. But like, I want to teach people how to get out of their W-2 jobs as quick as possible and scale a real estate company. Because I truly do believe that just looking at my life, you put in 2 years of hard work and that opens you up for the rest of your life to making multiple six figures with not that much work. And the whole point of it, this goes back to, you know, we talked about this at the beginning, how real estate can lead to a better life. The whole point of it is not for money. I don't want to teach people that want the fancy cars and the huge houses. Not there's nothing wrong with that, but I want to teach people how to make money so they can live a better life, so they can spend more quality time with their family. They can give to organizations that they want to give to, that they can spend more time with their family. They can vacation how they want to vacation. I want to teach people how to make money to be able to do that, because honestly, that's what we've done. And it's been so life-giving and fruitful for us. And so I want to teach that. I'm not saying there's anything bad about the fancy cars and the nice watches, but that's not the point. It's how can you make enough money so you can go live your passions and your dreams?
Awesome, man. And that's DealFlow?
DealFlow, yes.
Which I'm an advisor in, which I'm so glad you brought me in to be an advisor in DealFlow. I've actually never in 15 years of educating, like public education, I've never endorsed or been an advisor in any sort of education or training company, like ever. You know, I was just the guy on Bigger Pockets, but I never like was like, this is the guy you should go and pay to learn from until you. Because I'm like, the same reason I say that I brought you on the show, because I'm like, I think you're the real deal. I think you're good at it, and because you're actively investing. So,
dude, thank you. That means a lot.
Yeah, man. I'm excited about it. Excited to help where I can. Where can people find you? Where can they find DealFlow? Where can you learn more?
So DealFlow is just going to be DealFlowRealEstate.com. So really simple, DealFlowRealEstate.com. We probably should put in a promo code for anybody that's listening to this, but I didn't think that through.
Just mention the podcast and you'll, I don't know, you'll save some
I don't know
money.
How much, I don't know any of that. So DealFlowRealEstate.com, but at the end of the day, you can find me on Instagram. Instagram is where I'm at. It's cam.cathcart, C-A-T-H-C-A-R-T. Follow me there. I promise I'm going to start posting more. I think it's been a month since my last post.
That's all right. I'm taking over your social soon.
So I'm going to start posting more. I want to let people in on our life, what we're doing. And so follow me there.
I love it. And we're going to get you hooked up on many chats so you can do the automation. So you can also DM Cam. I'm going to make sure I get this done before. This is my advising role right here, right? So you're going to have this program which can automate DMs. So if you DM Cam or me, either one of us on Instagram, DM us the word DealFlow, DEALFLOW.
Yes.
We will send you some more information about it.
Yes, we will send
That's
you.
That's automation right there.
Should we send them our training? Our four-part training?
The four-part thing we did?
Yeah.
What's it called?
The Four Horsemen.
Yeah. It's all about how to get deals.
Yes. I don't know how the Four Horsemen tie into that, but it's about how to get deals, and it's going to be great.
It's a good video series. We spent the whole day filming it.
It was a blast, too.
It was a blast. All right. We'll send that to you if you just go, and that's free, right?
Completely free. Yeah.
Completely free. Just shoot me a DM to Beardy Brandon or to cam.cathcart. Just word deal flow, and we'll send you that.
Love it.
All right. That's all we got, man. Thanks.
Awesome. Dude, thanks so much for having me on.
I'm excited for the future. Oh, by the way, people, I filmed a bunch of episodes like over on the road before that have not been released yet. So this episode might come out and then we may go back to a few more episodes of just me solo and then go back to Cam again. So Cam's going to get worked into the rotation over the next few months, but you're going to start hearing from Cam quite a bit.
Love it.
I appreciate you, man.
Dude, had a blast. Thank you. I appreciate you.
I appreciate you. And that, my people, is the show. Thank you for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the insights from the episode. And hey, before you go, if you enjoyed this episode or you enjoy the show in general, please consider leaving us a rating and a review wherever you listen to podcasts. We really do value your feedback and we read your comments to make future decisions about topics and guests and everything else. Plus, it helps us reach more people the more reviews we have. And last but not least, please head over to social media and consider friending, following, subscribing, and all that stuff to both Better Life, at Better Life over on Instagram, and my own personal, at Beardy Brandon for more. That's Beardy with a Y at the end of it, Beard with a Y, Brandon on YouTube, Instagram, everywhere else. Thanks again for listening. I am honored that you would bring me along on your journey to real estate investing, to building wealth without losing your soul and creating your better life. This show has been a production of the Better Life Tribe, copyright 2024. Our producer is Kevin Leahy with Podcast Point Man. Our videographer and all-around talented video guy, Carson Smith. My co-host is the amazing Cam Cathcart with DealFlowRealEstate.com. And finally, this show has been all about living a better life. But if you want my spiritual answer to what it takes to live not only a better life, but the best life, head over to abetterlife.com/bestlife. I got a 13-minute special video for you there. For the Better Life Tribe, my name is Brandon Turner, signing off.